You can do more than make a year-end gift. You can become a FaithFi partner. Hi, I'm Rob West. When you give to FaithFi, you're not just supporting a radio program. You're helping equip millions of families to live as faithful stewards through our app, studies, devotionals, and the Faith and Finance radio program. When you give a one-time gift of $400 or more, or become a monthly partner at $35, you'll receive exclusive resources like our Faithful Steward magazine, devotionals, and premium tools in the FaithFi app. Right now, thanks to generous donors, every donation made before December 31st will be matched dollar for dollar. That means your gift goes twice as far to help families manage God's money God's way and treasure what truly lasts. But the match ends soon, so don't wait. Visit faithfi.com/give today. Now, on to the podcast. The holidays inspire generosity, but God calls us to something deeper, walking alongside those in need in ways that restore dignity and hope. Hi, I'm Rob West. While Christmas is a season of giving, true, impactful generosity requires wisdom. God invites us to go beyond a one-time act of charity and into relationships that mirror His heart for renewal. Today, we're joined by Lisa Sheltra to talk about helping the poor this Christmas and long after. Then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, our guest today is Lisa Sheltra, Director of Community Engagement at Salt and Light, a ministry committed to helping without hurting by offering support that empowers rather than creating dependency. Lisa, what a treat to have you with us.
Oh, thanks so much. It's good to be here today.
Lisa, many people feel an extra tug toward generosity during the Christmas season. Philippians 2:4 says, "Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others," which I think really captures the spirit of what we're discussing today, entering into someone's life with humility and genuine care. So let's start there. How would you describe this deeper kind of generosity?
That's a great question. I love that because, you know, a lot of times at the holidays, but also year round, people think about generosity as just giving things freely. Yeah. And that's part of it. But I think that for us as a faith-based organization, giving has to flow out of our relationship with Christ and the grace and love that we find present there. So, you know, the Bible gives us a model of what giving in love looks like because, you know, it tells us how God gave to us. So I like to think about this just through sort of the framework of John 3:16. You know, it talks about that when God so loved us, what he gave us was not something temporary or material or anything like that. You know, he gave us Christ, which is what addresses our deepest brokenness and all the things, all the places where we need restoration. Mm. And, you know, he did that so that we could have life that is thriving, flourishing, instead of an experience of brokenness and destruction. So for us, if we're going to show God's love to others, then that kind of generosity needs to be reflected, not just offering relief, but a full vision for restoration, for reconciliation of all our relationships. And so that to us means, you know, living deeply together in a kingdom community, in a Christ-centered community like that, you know, needs are met as a function of that community life, of the relationships that we have with one another. And it's more and deeper and fuller than sort of like random anonymous giving or, you know, one-time transactional events or something like that.
That's really well said. I want to dig into that idea of just providing relief because many churches feel the pressure in December to default to handouts, food drives, toy drives, clothing drives, and those are good things. But what's the challenge when we rely too heavily on relief alone?
Yeah. So there are definitely times when relief is necessary, but because of its nature, that it takes place by definition in situations where there's a giver-receiver imbalance, you know, it's a one-way process. And so when we extend that imbalance by making relief the norm, that is, we always feel like that's relationally unproductive. And also it's spiritually unhealthy for people on both sides of the equation. So holiday giving for all of us is a relational act, right? We give gifts to the people we love as a part of that relationship. And so bringing relief into that often takes away from people the opportunity for that relational piece of giving, especially between parents and children.
Yeah, excellent. Well, we're going to continue to unpack that after the break as we talk about what this looks like. Again, relief is great, but how do we go beyond that and truly providing development and giving in community in a way that fosters renewal and restoration as God designed it? Perhaps you're wanting to help this Christmas season, but you don't want to cause harm. How do you do that? Well, Lisa has some great advice and counsel for you. We're talking today with Lisa Sheltra, Director of Community Engagement at Salt and Light. Following this interview, your questions today at 800-525-7000. A quick break and back with much more right after this. Stay with us. What does your money say about what you truly treasure? Hi, I'm Rob West, and I want to invite you into a 21-day journey through God's Word in my new devotional entitled, Our Ultimate Treasure. It'll help you align your heart and your money with what really lasts. With your generous one-time gift of $400 or more, or $35 a month before December 31st, we'll send you an early copy as our thank you. Just head to faithfi.com/give.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. If you have money in an investment account, you know sometimes the stock market can seem like a roller coaster. But it's possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind as a do-it-yourself investor, no matter what's happening in the market. A short video webinar about that is available at soundmindinvesting.org. Financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
How do you help the poor this Christmas season? Well, we have some thoughts for you on that as we invite you into a giving opportunity that goes well beyond a one-time act of charity and into relationships that mirror God's heart for renewal. We're joined today by Lisa Sheltra, Director of Community Engagement at Salt and Light, a ministry committed to helping without hurting by offering support that empowers rather than creating dependency. And Lisa, before the break, we were talking about what this model of giving looks like. I know you work closely with the Chalmers Center, which often emphasizes the distinction between relief and development. I'd love for you to unpack what that means.
Yeah, that's something we talk about a lot because historically, we haven't done a great job in distinguishing between those two things. So relief is something that addresses the urgent, immediate need. We say sometimes is the tourniquet. It's what stops the bleeding, right? But development is long term. So that's about walking together with people as they use their own gifts and abilities to come to a healed situation. So most times when people are in need at the holidays, what you're seeing there is actually development needs, not relief needs. And so, in other words, if they are struggling at the holidays, they probably are struggling all the rest of the time. And so that quick fix of, you know, bringing a basket of gifts or whatever, or, you know, providing a holiday meal as relief, it can feel satisfying to us as a giver, but it doesn't typically do anything to move families forward to finding, you know, lasting community or long-term solutions. It's like just applying a new tourniquet over and over, right? Instead of addressing the wound. So development grows dignity for the participants because they are not just part of the process, they're driving the process as well. They're not just passively receiving, you know, whatever someone else wants to hand to them.
Yeah. So let's unpack what this looks like a bit. How does Salt and Light then stay anchored in dignity while still responding well during, let's say, the Christmas season?
Well, so, you know, our empowerment model is in place year round. So our families participate in the program all the time through their own investment in the program. They are not being passive recipients of charity. We make it possible for people to come into our regular stores and be customer and a guest just like everyone else, because we're creating opportunity for them to have their own currency, for them to exercise their own autonomy. And so that holiday support just flows naturally out of the ongoing relationships that we have with the participants in our program. So families have the opportunity to provide gifts for their own loved ones. And they exercise their own choice. They select what fits their needs, what they know, you know, their children will like. And what we find is that's really powerful. You know, we have people tell us, like, this is the first Christmas in 8 years I've been able to get my gifts for my family myself.
Oh, wow. I love that. We'll talk about what this looks like for individuals, those listening today. But let's talk first about churches. How can churches then redirect that energy that you're describing towards something more effective, a better model?
Yeah, great question. So here's some things that we encourage churches and organizations to think about. One thing is partnering with ministries that are already practicing development. Like, you don't have to reinvent the wheel, but there are people out there that are doing that and are looking for somebody to come alongside. And a lot of times that involves volunteering. And so we try to tell people, look to volunteer in ways that build relationships and consider that those relationships maybe are going to be ongoing, not just a one-time transactional thing. One thing that I always think of is, you know, we're here all year round, not just in November or December. And so supporting something that's going to go on after the holidays, or getting involved in something that's going to go on after the holidays as well, is really important. And then try to encourage giving of your congregants that strengthens this kind of sustainable ministry and is not just a sort of one-time consumable event. And the holidays is a great time to use that moment when people are thinking about getting involved and enthusiastic about helping others to connect them with something that is going to be a year-round involvement for them.
Yeah. What about individuals? You know, a lot of people may be even discouraged wanting to help, but unsure how to do it without causing harm. So speak to that listener today who wants to help. What does that look like for them?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. Some people are like, oh, well, we're not supposed to give, so what are we supposed to do, right? But I think as you come alongside organizations that are doing this well or are connected with individuals in need, just being humble and willing to learn, that's the most important part, because sometimes we come in with the assumption that, you know, the surface needs are all that we need to be concerned with, or we don't have a good understanding of what the person's real life needs are. And so we don't have to be perfect as we start to do that. We just want to be present with others. We want to be patient. We want to be good listeners. And, you know, God is going to honor those efforts if we are approaching with humility. We're being loving, gentle. We're honoring the other person's dignity. And so I think the hardest thing about that is then sometimes people feel like, well, it doesn't seem like enough, right? It feels great to say, like, we gave away, you know, 900 turkeys. But we have to start thinking that the metric is kingdom values. And that's much more relational than just running up numbers, right? So the goal isn't to do more, but to do good in the places where we're connected.
Perhaps, Lisa, does that look like doing for one what you wish you could do for everyone? You know, because I'm thinking about, like, for instance, my sister, she over many months ran into the same woman who appeared to be homeless at her grocery store, and she befriended her, you know, invested in her life. They developed this beautiful relationship over many years. She ultimately passed away a few years ago, but it was incredible to watch what God did as she invested in that one individual. Is that a model that I think is akin to what you're describing?
Absolutely. Those are the things that we love to see happening when people inside our spaces make those relationship connections that last over time. And I think sometimes people can be under the impression that they're doing that when they say, oh, we're going to adopt a family, you know, for the holidays. But it's a little different than that, right? It's not just, oh, we're going to, you know, helicopter in and we're going to put all of our giving efforts into, you know, these three children. We still have to be careful that we're engaging in a healthy way, but definitely, you know, I think less is more when it comes to that, because the kind of deep relational investment that is required to come alongside and support someone in a healthy way, it's not something that we can scale up to, you know, thousands of people. It yeah. does have to work on this small scale first.
Mm. Lisa, just 20 seconds left. What's one thing you could leave with our listeners that they could apply well beyond even this Christmas season?
Just seeing other people as image bearers of God who have their own gifts and their own agency and looking to come alongside and help support opportunities for people to use their own power rather than getting distracted by the idea of ourselves as the fixers.
That is well said. Well, Lisa, I so appreciate your time today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
When we give in ways that honor dignity and build authentic connection and relationships, we don't just meet needs. We participate in God's work of renewing lives. That's Lisa Sheltra, you heard from today. She's Director of Community Engagement at Salt and Light. You can learn more at saltandlightministry.org. That's saltandlightministry.org. Your calls are next, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. And if you prefer not to call, keep in mind, you can always send us an email at askrob@faithfi.com. We'll be right back.
Faith Fi is grateful for support from One Ascent. One Ascent believes that your values inspire why you invest and how they can inspire how you invest. One Ascent's goal is to provide solutions designed for every need and invest in businesses that bless the people and places God has made. They want to help investors do well by doing good. To explore a new way of investing that aligns with your values, more information is available at oneascent.com and by clicking Analyze My Investments.
Healthcare is complicated. It doesn't have to be. If you don't love how your health insurance works, maybe it's time to leave traditional health insurance behind. Take charge of your healthcare with Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM offers you flexibility. Enroll anytime. Choose your own provider and select the program that fits your needs and budget. CHM is the original faith-based way of taking care of your medical bill costs. Learn more at chministries.org/faithfi.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance. Folks, as we approach year end, would you consider a gift to FaithFi? Every gift will be doubled before the end of the year, and a gift of any amount will ensure that you receive my new devotional, Our Ultimate Treasure, as our gift to you. Just go to faithfi.com/give. All right, let's take some questions today. The number to get in on the conversation, 800-525-7000. Let's go to Texas and begin with Nisi. Go ahead.
Yes, Rob, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for your call.
Yes. My question is, when a person has their land paid for before marriage, do they have to put their spouse on their land taxes?
No, they are not required to add a spouse to a property tax record after marriage. So there's a difference between ownership and marital status. If the property was purchased and paid for before marriage, it's generally considered separate property, not marital property. The property tax records reflect legal ownership, not marital status. So unless the deed is retitled, the county will keep it in the original owner's name, and there is no requirement to do otherwise. When a spouse might be added, well, they could choose to add the spouse to the deed, not the tax record, if they want joint ownership or to simplify estate matters. But doing so is voluntary, and it can have legal or tax implications. And then, of course, as it relates to property tax, the tax bill will remain in the owner's name unless that deed is changed to add the spouse. The spouse's name is not automatically added by the county or the tax office just because of marriage. Does that make sense, though?
It makes sense, but the tax office, they added my husband to my tax statement.
Okay, so you had this property before marriage. You married.
And then they added him automatically?
Yes, she said that he had to be added on. And I'm trying to see what steps do I need to take to get that changed. Because he's not on my deeds, but he's on my tax, the statement that you pay every year.
Okay, the property taxes?
Correct.
Okay, got it. So have you talked to them about this and they just said it was automatic and that's just the normal protocol?
That's what the lady told me, that he had to be put on.
Okay.
But you couldn't tell me why.
Yeah, I'm confused by that. It's unusual because it sounds like perhaps the tax office made an administrative error or an assumption after seeing the marital status records. So what I would do is verify official ownership, and that's going to be the deed. So the deed filed with the county recorder or registrar of deeds is the only document that determines ownership. If that obviously is just in your name, then that's covered. And then I'd contact the property tax assessor's office and explain, maybe you get somebody at one level up from who you talked to before, explain that your husband is not on the deed and should not appear on the property tax record, provide a copy of the recorded deed showing you as sole owner, and request that that tax roll be corrected to reflect the deed.
Okay, that's what I'll do because I am sole owner.
Okay. Yeah, very good. And you're going to want to get written confirmation. So once it's corrected, ask for written confirmation that your husband is not considered a co-owner for tax or legal purposes. But, you know, perhaps if you filed for a homestead exemption after marriage, maybe they assumed both spouses should be listed. But the bottom line is you should be able to get that clarified because that sounds a bit unusual unless I'm missing something. Niecy, thanks for your call today. We appreciate you being on the program. To Tampa. Hi, Pat. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a widow, and I am retired, and I just sold a piece of property because I can't take care of it anymore, and it's too much liability for me. And I made $100,000 on it. I don't know what to do with it. My home's paid for. My vehicle's paid for. I'm debt-free. But I have a small 401k. I think I got $30,000 in there, which is what I'm using now to live on.
Okay.
And I just need to know what to do.
Yeah, very good. Well, that's helpful. And I want to give you some direction. But let me just clarify one thing, Pat. Do you have any emergency liquid savings that's outside of the 401k, or is that really it?
That's all I have.
Okay. Yeah. So what I would probably do is let's go ahead and get 6 to 12 months worth of expenses and keep it in a high yield savings account. So if let's just take your Social Security, which is basically what you're living on, that'd be somewhere between $14,000 and let's call it $30,000 that I'd put into a high yield savings account. So that way you can keep the $35,000 invested. And let's say you were to put $30,000 away into high yield savings, it's still earning, let's say 3.75%. It may come down over time. You're getting something on it, but that would give you basically $70,000 to invest. So between the 401k and that $70,000, you know, you could put that to work. The good news is that on $100,000, you should be able to, if it's invested properly, you know, pull $4,000 a year and never see that principal decline. Now, it might in one given month, but over a 12-month period, you should be able to maintain that balance. Well, $4,000 a year would give you another $330 a month. Now, I'm not saying you'd have to take that, but I'd be very comfortable with you taking up to that amount and hopefully just maintaining that $100,000 for the rest of your life, which would give you some nice cushion from $2,300 to $2,600. The other thing that would do is, because now we've got your 12 months of expenses in high yield savings, now it doesn't require you to sell any of your investments from the $100,000, the $35,000 plus the $70,000. So we can just let those grow. And if you have something unexpected, you'd pull it out of savings, not investments. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Okay. I didn't think of that.
Yeah. And what I would do is with the $100,000, the $35,000 plus the $70,000, I'd have an advisor manage that for you. And so that way it's not on you to pick the investments, but you could hire an investment advisor, and he or she would know that, okay, we're first goal is to protect what we've got. Second goal is to generate enough income and appreciation on a conservative basis so that you could pull out up to $4,000 a year, 4%, which is very reasonable. And you'd have your emergency fund, you'd have your extra $4,000 a year, and that should put you in great shape. So to find an advisor there in Tampa, a certified Kingdom advisor, I'd head to our website, faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com. Right there at the top of the page, you can click Find a CKA, or better yet, we've got a direct link. Just go to findacka.com, and then you could do a zip code search, interview two or three advisors. The one thing you're going to need to look at is make sure you're above their minimum. So a lot of times $100,000 is the minimum for an advisor to manage it. In some cases, it's even higher than that. But I suspect that if you interview two or three, you'll find one that could take this on for you, do the investment management, and then you just carve out the emergency savings. Okay?
Got it. Okay. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Of course, Pat. Thanks for calling today. Big thanks to my team today, Devin, Autumn, and Taylor. Couldn't do it without them. Thank you for being along with us. We'll see you next time.
Faith and Finance is provided by FaithFi and listeners like you.